And friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, irishradio.com, worldwide. I'm delighted. First of all, we got to take our microphones across the ocean to Ireland and welcome Niall Murphy. He's a lawyer, a solicitor, and a partner of Kevin Orr Winters and Company. It's the largest criminal law practice on the island of Ireland. And first of all, you're very welcome there, Niall. How are you?
Thank you, Adrian. Delighted to be invited on your show. Really pleased to speak to you.
We're delighted to welcome you as well. And, perhaps we'd start before we get into, what was a very successful trip. The organization is, you are a representative secretary, actually, of a relatively new organization called Ireland's Future. It's a civic nationalism group aiming to promote discussion about a united Ireland in the context of Brexit. Can we start by asking you, to maybe translate into layman's language, what is Brexit? What is this? It's, and where is it at? Is there a timeline? Is there a mandatory date where this has to be sorted out?
Yeah. Well, Brexit in and of itself is Britain's exit from the European Union, and it has happened. It's a feature of life that we now have to adjust to. But in terms of the island of Ireland, Brexit represents an abuse of democracy. We did have a vote in the northern jurisdiction as to express our intention. Did we want to remain as European citizens, or did we wish to leave the European Union? And there was an overwhelming mandate at that referendum that we stay. So independent of that express democratic expression, the British government has proceeded to ignore democracy and has exited the EU. So for the entirety of my life, I have grown up benefiting from my European citizenship, and that has now been ripped from me. That's pretty egregious, and it creates a very different constitutional context within which we all view where we're at on this island. And Brexit as an event has been described as the earthquake, which has changed how people view our constitutional relationships. And there has been an organic, grassroots-led debate around this. And really, that's the roots of the organisation, Ireland's Future. Ireland's Future really started out in the coffee shop at the side of a football pitch at the school car park when you're dropping your kids off at school. I work as a solicitor. The lawyers would be talking in the court well before the judge comes out. And everybody was catalyzed by this abuse of democracy. And there is a new conversation now on our island, which did not exist, I'll be very frank, prior to 2016, as to where our future lies. And there is an overwhelming sense of inevitability that Irish unification represents the best way of life for everybody living on the island. And our organisation exists to give expression to that intention. We're guided wholly and exclusively by the values of the Good Friday Agreement. Mm. And we're dedicated to the promotion and protection of human rights, equality, and crucially to foster mutual respect between all the views and traditions that share our island. We exist to stimulate debate, to commission research, to publish public positions on the crucial issues which will inform the debate. What does a new health system look like? What are the economic opportunities in terms of constitutional law? How can this happen? An education system, a justice system, a policing system. These are all issues that must be contemplated, debated, that people need to be informed about before they make an informed decision. What we don't want to do is replicate the madness, which was Brexit. Brexit was, I think history will record, a reckless question put before, I hesitate to say ignorant, but an unprepared public to really massage the egos of the right wing of the British Conservative Party. And trading on lies and jingoism, it passed. And nobody knew the answer to what Brexit was. The question was posed and an attempt was made to work it out afterwards. And we believe that we can conduct our affairs more maturely. And that's why Ireland's Future exists. We want to stimulate debate, research, and assess all of the outcomes before we would venture to engage what would be the full outworking of the Good Friday Agreement. A border poll is legislated for in the Northern Ireland Act 1988, which is the legislative outworking of the Good Friday Political Agreement in Schedule 1. So we would respectfully contend that no border poll should occur unless every citizen on this island knows precisely what they would be voting for.
Yeah. Niall, I just want, you know, to ask you again about perception. First of all, I've been around a lot longer than you, and I do know that the desire and the fight for a united Ireland is not something new. It except that if we go back to, you know, some 60 years ago, when I arrived in this country here, there were two groups. Primarily in America, particularly in Irish America, one group saying it should never, you know, it will never happen in our lifetime because unionists in the north of Ireland are in the majority and they would never let it happen. And this is all, of course, pre-Good Friday Agreement. And then there were others that said that the Good Friday, that the terms of the Good Friday Agreement was not going to make it easy to address exactly what Ireland's Future, your organization, is doing. Why plan when this is so far off? And since there is, you know, obviously, you're talking, as you mentioned, about abuses from the British. Let's just go to this week, a few days ago, where, you know, the UK, without much without, you know, negotiation, without any, you know, input from Ireland, says, okay, I'll tell you what we're going to do. Non-Irish EU citizens crossing the border, you know, we need a clearance to cross the border. I mean, that in itself, in the midst or coming out of a pandemic in a very unstable world, as we know, primarily because of the Russian attack on Ukraine, why would one think that in the midst of, or with Brexit breathing down our necks, throwing a spanner into the works at this point, other than, you know, let's show them what the hell, that we're still in charge and we're going to do whatever we want to do. What is your reaction to this latest unreasonable, unexplained, rule which now threatens, you know, the freedom of border-free Ireland? What's your read on that?
Yeah, there's quite a lot to unpack there, Adrian. Just to address maybe the first issue in relation to the unionist majority. There is no unionist majority anymore. That has gone quite evidently. The Northern state was set up to ensure a unionist majority in perpetuity, but demographics have intervened. We have a census due at the end of this year that's expected to report a Catholic majority, and I don't profess to source things in religiosity, because you could have Catholic unionists, and I know many nationalist Protestants. But in terms of electoral results, in the last three elections to parliaments that unionism aspired to, the majority that they have held forever has evaporated and is never, ever coming back. There is no unionist majority at Stormont anymore. There are 10 nationalist MPs returned from this jurisdiction to Westminster, only 8 unionists. And in the last European election, before we were dragged out in an abuse of democracy, whereas previously there had always been 2 unionist MEPs and 1 nationalist MEP, there was 1 nationalist, 1 unionist, and 1 alliance. So things change, is the first thing I would say. The unionist majority has gone forever. And with that, there needs to be a new reflection on how our society conducts itself in the spirit of the Good Friday Agreement, of course. The most condemning statistic, which I might proffer to you and your listeners, is that which was published by the Irish Times September 2020, and it reported on statistics which it had derived from the Northern Department of Education, which showed the breakdown is quite explicit in terms of nursery level, primary level, secondary and grammar sector, university, that the enrollment of children on a religious basis, and I caveat that in terms of religiosity is not the best metric, but it's the only metric that is recorded, that 51% of children in education were Catholic, 32% were Protestant, and of the remaining 17.4%, those children were in attendance at Irish medium schools and schools in the integrated sector. So the trajectory is one way. The children who will vote for a United Ireland are already born, and most of them are at school. The only quartile in the Northern society, judging by the last census, where there is a unionist majority, is in the over 65s. So that's not a demographic which is going to sustain partition in the way that it has previously. So times change is the first instance. And in our respectful analysis, and we do benefit from, if you look at our website, our board of directors, we do benefit from some quite informed commentators. Our analysis is that reunification is inevitable. It's going to happen this decade. And it is incumbent upon the Irish government, really, to commence the process of planning and preparation. And towards that end, the Taoiseach Micheál Martin has set up the Shared Island Unit, and that is commendable. But planning and preparation needs to go further than that. Just to address your second point in relation to the the visa waiver scheme that the British government have imposed, that's a retrograde step. We're dealing with a right-wing government, which is fast becoming an international pariah. It is not the international influence that it once was, and it has condemned itself to that position by virtue of its isolationist English nationalist approach. It did not impose such restrictions on Irish nationals, which might have been its original intention. But should President Biden come to Dublin, for example,
right,
he would have to fill out a visa waiver before he crosses the border, and that's not on. A taxi driver from Germany who might live in Dundalk could not take a fare to Newry. A Polish ambulance driver living in Letterkenny could not arrive for work at McGilvin Hospital in Derry. And those are specific factual experiences that I am aware of. And they are antagonistic. They are detrimental to the concept of good relations on this island. And we are unfortunately dealing with a British government that is conditioned by its own puritanical ideology. Mm. We feel that we can do better than that, and we feel that in terms of constitutional law, that the tools are there. Article 3 of Bunrock na hÉireann is quite explicit. It compels the Irish government to abide by the firm will of the Irish nation in harmony and friendship to unite all of the people who share the territory of the island of Ireland and the diversity of their identities and traditions, recognising that a united Ireland shall be brought about only by peaceful means, with the consent of a majority of people democratically expressed in both jurisdictions on this island. Schedule 1 of the Good Friday Agreement, the Northern Ireland Act, as I said, provides the legislative mechanism by which a border poll will be convened. So it is going to happen, and it cannot occur in the same context by which Brexit was allowed to happen, i.e. ignorance, lies, no preparation. We respectfully contend that the preparation must commence now, and we feel that it's an exercise in good citizenship to highlight this and bring this to the public attention, which is what we exist for.
It would appear, though, particularly as we're living, you know, in the volatile world that this is becoming, that the timing of this, particularly for some of us who say, you know, what are they going to come up with next, that this one, you know, that this current, first of all, establishment of a border which is no longer there, that this is, you know, maybe it's suspect to begin with. I mean, again, at a time when it's in nobody's interest who is this punishing? It's crazy at a time when, the economy on the island of Ireland doesn't need any more restrictions. And is it in some way tied in with the, with the free trade and how that one is shaking out?
Well, we as an organization, we do have a very keen eye on the concept of best economic opportunities, and we do engage quite successfully with the business community. We actually held a business lunch just before Christmas in December, the first weekend of December, in the largest hotel in Belfast, and it was the business community of the North, really. A third of whom I would estimate were unionists.
Mm.
And in many respects, economic unification has already occurred as a byproduct of Brexit.
Yeah.
Brexit, whereas might have been the union stream, really is a nightmare, and I think history will record that as well. It was English nationalism's ideology which is isolationist and has no thoughts for those living on this island of any political persuasion. And north-south trade has rocketed.
Mm-hmm.
The economic pathways always find a way. The mercantile class will always ensure that business is conducted. And when one looks at the exports from ports out of Cork, Waterford, Dublin, they have really been catalysed by this. So the economic argument has already been demonstrated. But what we need to do is to ensure that all of our people, and by that I mean, you know, my neighbours, my work colleagues, my friends of the unionist persuasion in the north, we need to ensure that everybody feels comfortable in the new constitutional persuasion. It's not going to be a case of just tacking on six counties to 26. It's not going to be a romantic vision of four green fields. This will be the Second Republic. France is on its Fifth Republic. This has to be forever. It's not a case of Brits out, it's a case of Brits in. And we need voices in Dublin, in the diaspora, telling unionists, we want you. We want this to be a 7 million citizen island nation in the European Union, standing proudly as the frontier to the Atlantic Ocean. We can be an economic dynamo powerhouse in global terms. We can stand on our own 2 feet, and we can conduct affairs in the best interests of every citizen living on the island. For example, in the southern jurisdiction, 1 in 6 people who live there were not born there. That figure is slightly more diluted in the north, where it's 1 in 10 people. But there is a new Irish who want the best for their families, want the best for their children. And again, it's our informed but respectful analysis that unification is inevitable, and that it is a compelling responsibility that be managed maturely, respectfully, in the spirit of conversation. And that's what we're about. We want to stimulate conversation. We've held town hall meetings in every corner of our island. We've been to Limerick, Cork. We're in the Mansion House in Dublin this week. We're in Dundalk with future events in Letterkenny. We've been in Armagh, Belfast, of course. We gather exceptional attendances at our events. We televise them online. Our viewing figures are exceptional. Tens of thousands of people log in live because this is a real debate. People want to know. But we are a civic organisation doing our best, and really this is the job of government.
Yeah. Now, important, I think, you know, to note that this is a civic group organisation, not a political party, not a wing, not an affiliate.
Yes, absolutely, that's right.
That's, I think that's probably, you know, the main point that a lot of people will say, oh, geez, here's another, party springing up in the north with an agenda that smacks very much, pretty much the same as, say, the nationalist community and the nationalist voters in the north. But the truth is that, protection of human rights, equality, and the fostering of that mutual respect between all views, that's basically what you're doing. You're not promoting, an image that's saying, listen, we want a united Ireland, and the end qualifies the means.
Yeah, that you're quite right. We're not a political party, and we'll never be. I can assure you of that. And we're not a northern entity, albeit I'm personally from Belfast. Our chairperson is Senator Francis Black, who's a proud Dubliner. And our base is on an all-island basis. Any constitutional change on this island in recent years has came about through civic organisations leading the way. The repeal of the 8th Amendment in the Bunrock na Héireann was a non-party political movement. Marriage equality came about through no political party taking the lead, but all political parties, and I mean every single political party, got behind both constitutional movements.
Yeah.
And we're finding the same here. We've had every single political party share our events. We have had the leaders of all political parties speak to us and speak at our events. We have good relationships with Neil Richmond and Fine Gael, for example. Jim O'Callaghan and Fianna Fáil has proffered a very thoughtful written opinion as to his view of what a new Ireland might look like. The Green Party, the Labour movement, Sinn Féin and the SDLP have also contributed to organisations' events.
Yeah.
So we feel that we are reflective of a groundswell movement, which is repeatedly reflected in opinion polls on the topic of reunification. So we feel that we're perhaps ahead of the government, that the government will respond in time to what it will be testing in its own polling and what it receives back on the doorsteps. And we hope that our educated research and publication thereof will assist in informing people as to the best economic and societal outcomes which are achievable through the unification of our island.
I want to, and friends, again, my guest is Niall Murphy. He's not only a board representative for the organisation Ireland's Future, he's also secretary. And you reached across the ocean in the midst of our, St. Patrick's, the busy St. Patrick's season. You had two public meetings, one in Philadelphia on March 12th, and one in Rosie O'Grady's in the Manhattan Club here on the 14th. To have Congressman Brendan Boyle, as your keynote speaker here, lends a lot of credibility, to the fact that, and I think it's no secret, that great number of, Irish-American influence has, been in no small way responsible, for the deliverance of the Good Friday Agreement. And from that time forward, some Irish-Americans who were able to identify and support the Good Friday Agreement and have involvement for Americans have kind of been, I wouldn't say shut out, but feel like, everything is hunky-dory now in the North. Let's not get bogged down any further. They're doing all right. To have a cause, to have something specific where American, Irish American influence. This is real. It's something we can get involved in, not at some time in the future, but this is something that we can have tremendous influence and input in starting now. Would that be accurate?
Yes, I think that's fair. I think the view that everything's all right is outdated. The absence of violence does not necessarily mean the presence of justice. I think it's a remark from Martin Luther King. And yes, the guns are silent. I'm able to raise a family that hasn't had any experience of political violence, different to what I would have grown up in. And that's delightful and is a gift. But, you know, there has been a constitutional earthquake with the event of Brexit. There has been an abuse of democracy. And there is a movement for constitutional change. And I find it exciting to be alive at a time when our island will be unified. And I speak in the determinative because it is inevitable. And I genuinely feel that it will happen this decade. The last century seen the end of the British Empire, which would have been unforeseeable in the midst of it.
Yeah.
But it happened. And equally, the United Kingdom will come to an end. And that might be the secret wish of the English Conservative Party. English nationalism will rule England in perpetuity. Scotland, I forecast, will be independent before Irish unification.
And that's well underway, too.
It's very well underway. So it's not a fair or accurate analysis to contend that everything's all right, leave it alone. Everything's not all right. And there is a huge movement for change. With regards to Brendan Boyle, yes, we were absolutely thrilled that Brendan found the time to join us in Philadelphia. Our events, both in Philadelphia and in Manhattan, were awesome and awe-inspiring. We were delighted with the reception, the welcome, the deep well of understanding of Irish political affairs. And I also was able to thank Brendan Boyle very publicly in his own community for his learned advocacy. Brendan Boyle has been a constant source of strength for Irish citizens living in the north, whose democracy has been abused through Brexit, through his frequent television appearances on British and Irish TV. As you will know, Newsnight on BBC Two is one of the opinion shapers in terms of British political policy. And Brendan Boyle has been a frequent contributor on Newsnight. And through his membership of the Ways and Means Committee, his immediate articulation that there would be no trade deal whilst the Good Friday Agreement is under threat, and Brexit does threaten the Good Friday Agreement, and that there'd be no doubt about that. But to have that said by a member of the Ways and Means Committee meant so much. It really did mean so much, and it galvanised and gave people inspiration and hope. And to be able to thank Brendan in person was an honour for me personally, and it was one that I extend on behalf of hundreds of thousands of people resident here. But we also know that we're living with an American administration that's perhaps the most Irish influenced ever. We have President Biden, of course, and his proud Mayo and Louth heritage, but we also have the Secretary of State for Labour, Marty Walsh from Boston, President of Connemara. Whilst he was the Mayor of Boston, he signed the sister city agreement with Belfast, which ushered in a new year of cooperation between the capital of Irish America, if I might be so bold, and my own city. An unbreakable bond was formed And we're proud that Marty Walsh has attained such a high office in the American administration. And you can't speak of Irish influence in the American administration without coming to go on Nancy Pelosi or Richie Neal. Richie Neal is obviously the chair of the Ways and Means Committee,
yeah,
and has taken part in a webcast with Ireland's Future, which was hugely popular for us. It's available on our website. And he was, again, very candid, very clear in an interview that there would be no trade deal with Britain while it threatens peace in my country. So we do take succour and comfort from our political friends in America. But we also appreciate that the diaspora is the 33rd county, that so many people left our island through economic destitution or political persecution and have made very successful lives for themselves in America. My father's one of 12, six boys, six girls. My father was the youngest of the six boys. He had two older brothers that had to go and live in America, in Chicago, and two older sisters that went to live in Bangor in Maine. Two brothers that went to London and two sisters that went to London. So I have as many cousins in England as I do in America, as I do in Ireland. And they're all as Irish as me. They all have the exact same DNA lineage as I have. And their opinions about our island are as relevant as mine. So I want to stimulate information, conversation on Ireland's future in America, in England, in Europe, as much as I do at home. And to that end, I should extend a hearty invitation. Our Ireland's Future has booked the largest conference centre on the island, the Three Arena in Dublin, for Saturday the 1st of October, for what will be the largest United Ireland conference this century.
Wow.
It's going to be a moment in history, and we want everybody to come home for it. It's going to be a joyous celebratory day, and will really represent a strong milestone in the evolution towards unification. And I would be proud to extend a Cead Míle Fáilte to all members of the diaspora to come home and to express your support for unification on Saturday the 1st of October at the Three Arena in Dublin.
Wow. That's amazing. Now, again, Ireland's Future, friends, the organization is a civic nationalism group aiming to promote discussion about a united Ireland in the context of Brexit. But I want, I know a lot of people know of your great work and your association and affiliation, you know, with Relatives for Justice in in Northern Ireland, and that's how, you know, the Relatives for Justice organization is one that, you know, has for years, it seems like it is the sincere wish of, you know, of Britain to bury the past. Numerous attempts by most governments, you know, through the decades have said, you know, for Christ's sake, can we not move on and just bury the past? What's done is done. Just give us and you're a board member of that Relatives for Justice again, which for some sections still kind of, I wouldn't say unknown, but saying, listen, that's now so long ago, Britain has, been so stringent in not addressing that, and anything up until now has been just, all talk, no action. Can you describe for us what Relatives for Justice is and what the organization has been doing over what period?
Yeah, listen, it's one of the privileges of my life to be a board member of Relatives for Justice. They are an exceptional human rights NGO, offices in Belfast and Tyrone in Dungannon, and for decades have supported families that have witnessed the most egregious of human rights violations at the hands of the state, but also by non-state actors. They support and advocate for those that bore the brunt of violence, the bereaved and injured who still carry trauma, psychological scars and physical wounds, but also live in the absence of truth, justice and accountability. And they provide psychological support, counselling, but also assist and advise on legal advocacy. Mm-hmm. That's perhaps how my interface with them came through. My office represents many families, hundreds of families, who are seeking access to justice in courts in Belfast, London, and Strasbourg at the European Court. And we have, actually in the last year, experienced the most egregious affront to justice with the current British government's command paper on dealing with the past. On the 14th of July last year, the British government published a proposal that would have granted itself an immunity that has never been witnessed before in the history of the world. And I don't say that with any sense of hyperbole. Pinochet didn't even attempt an immunity as wide sweeping as the British government are now proposing to legislate for itself. And again, I would respectfully contend that the main reason that this command paper, which was published on the 14th of July 2021, has not found its way onto the statute book is because of the robust, undiluted representations coming from our friends and legislators in America. The proposals are an abject breach of the Good Friday Agreement. They would propose to close the Office of the Police Ombudsman. They would propose to shut down all of the extant inquests, of which there are more than 50, touching upon over 80 killings. Legacy is the defining issue of R10 and requires resolution through law, not amnesty. We have, even yesterday, or this week rather, we've seen a decision of the Belfast High Court to overturn a decision to discontinue the prosecution of Soldier F for the Bloody Sunday murders. So our judiciary are quite clear. The legal community is very, very clear. And Relatives for Justice is the foremost NGO supporting so many hundreds of families as they do, are crystal clear that there can be no amnesty and that every single family, no matter the source of their loss, has a human right to access to justice. And as long as RFJA are open as an organisation, that clarion voice will persist loudly and clearly. My good friend and colleague Mark Thompson recently gave evidence to the Tom Lantos Human Rights Commission.
Yes.
And is an exceptional advocate for those who experience the burden of loss. And we must listen to voices like Mark's. We must listen to voices like the Bloody Sunday families and all families. It's families that need this process, and we must respond to their needs. We should not respond to the needs of criminals that should be before the courts awaiting adjudication. They're entitled to a fair trial. Fair trials have been conducted. A right that was denied to so many thousands over the last 50 years here. But there is a process now, and that process is being denied to so many families, and it's evil.
Mm.
It's so hurtful. Many of my clients are older. They're in the winters of their lives, and in many cases, the only thing that keeps them going, wakes them up the next day, is the opportunity to have their day in court. And this law would militate against that, and it cannot be allowed to pass.
You know, finally, I would, you know, just like to point out that Irish America and the time is right now. The guidelines of Ireland's Future, the organization, coupled with the, you know, with the influence of Joe Biden as president in the United States, I just wanted, I think it is appropriate, though, now that we see, you know, that sanctions and more sanctions in the current situation with Russia do not seem to be kicking in to, you know, have the desired results. Now, Ireland, the White House on the free trade agreement, you know, and not just warning signs, but obviously, you know, threat to Britain that if you deviate from the Good Friday Agreement, we're not going to sign on to, which will affect your economy, we're not going to sign on, you know, to the great economic relationship that has heretofore been very much a part of the UK economy. Is anybody paying attention to that, or is this something that, not unlike, you know, the Relatives for Justice, is it something that might be going on the long finger, saying, well, you know, let's wait and see. Sure, maybe, you know, we'd have a new government in Washington more friendly to our, you know, our relationship and our traditional relationship.
I think if there had been a difference resident in the White House, the worst vestiges of Brexit might have already occurred here, and we don't know what that might have looked like. I shudder to think. But it is the presence of economic structure by virtue of the intelligent advocacy of Brendan Boyle and Richie Neal,
right,
that has protected us from the worst vestiges. However, this week I also noted that restrictions in relation to steel, British steel exports to America were lifted. They had been imposed in retaliation to EU tariffs on US Bourbon and wine and Harley Davidson motorbikes and such like, but last October President Biden abolished those Trump tariffs on the EU, and the EU reciprocated, but the tariffs remained on UK goods. So they were removed by the stroke of a pen by the United States Secretary of Commerce, Gina Raimondo, by the stroke of a pen. So it didn't go near Congress as a trade deal would.
Yeah.
But my understanding is that they need to be undertaken on a state-by-state basis, and I would appeal for cognizance to be given and respect off that, because it's trade which fashions the political policy of this current British government.
Yeah.
It's working. It's working to date. But we would need that steadfast, resolute attention to be applied on a weekly basis. In the absence of a treaty, for example.
Yeah. You know, I would like to point out that your organization, Ireland's Future, perhaps wasn't known on our side of the Atlantic as an organization that was not only just welcoming Irish Americans or those who in America are interested in the civil human rights, in economy in Northern Ireland, which is not being threatened, as evidenced by, again, this week, portraying a border which doesn't exist, that now Britain wants to make sure, you know, that they send a message throughout the world that they're in charge. There is a voice, one that we are very familiar with, and has been, and we have been, Máirtín Ó Maolar, who owns Belfast Media Group and the Irish Echo newspaper here in America. It's the oldest Irish American newspaper in America, past Lord Mayor of Belfast, and a huge influence in America. When Máirtín says, you know, if you don't know about Ireland's Future and the organization, and you probably don't, get on to our guest today, Niall Murphy, and I think it will be a unifying force for those in America who, again, would like to continue in support of particularly the human rights issues in Northern Ireland, and give Americans something to get behind. Again, coming from a great source of recommendation there, I'm delighted, Niall, that you have spent the time with us this morning, and I assume that we're going to see a lot more of your organization across America. You're off to a great start. And I think what's left is to make sure that there's a follow-up here, that people know that getting onto your website will fill in a tremendous amount of the information that should be very welcome. And the website is irelandsfuture.com. A pleasure. Thank you, Niall Murphy.
Thank you, Adrian. Very much a pleasure for your time. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you indeed. Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, US.